Thank you very much to all of you for the hospitality here. It's been a great week. I've had wonderful discussions. Thank you, Roger and Juan, for the invitation, Belen for helping us with everything. And thank you all for giving me a chance to present this talk here. So I'm visiting actually the condensed matter physics people, machine learning guys, but there are some things I'd like to show to this, to also to the Quantum Foundations group. So I am Leandro. And so I'm a permanent faculty at the Federal University of Rio de Janeiro. And also I have like a visiting position in São Paulo. And up to recently, I was also a frequent visitor at the International Institute of Physics in Natal. So I have the impression that many of you might not be so familiar with the geography in South America. So I took the freedom of showing you a map of South America before we start. So here's Rio, this thing here. Then São Paulo is only 45 minutes flight. And here's Natal. It's actually the closest point in Brazil to the European continent. And it's 3 hours flight from Rio. And here's Buenos Aires, where I'm actually from, right? It's a 3 hours flight also from Rio. Here's Cordoba, where Belen is from, right? Yeah. So, okay. I know that there are many specialists in quantum non-locality in the audience, but there are also people that are not specialists, and I would like to start by defining properly the scenario. I hope I can make it digestible to all of you. So let me start by the three variants of quantum non-locality for the bipartite case. So say that we have two users, Alice and Bob, and we're all used to quantum entanglement, right? So quantum entanglement is this thing that I represent here. So it's a property of quantum states. And typically you say that a quantum state is entangled. So we represent it by a density matrix. And we say that it's entangled if it's not separable, right? So if we can write it as the convex sum of local states for Alice and Bob. And then we say, so in quantum non-locality, we refer to this as the device-dependent scenario. We call it device-dependent because to check for entanglement, we have to trust our measurements. We have trusted and well-characterized measurement devices with which we can do quantum state tomography, for instance, and then check whether this property holds or not, right? But it depends on the device. I have to have a well-characterized measurement apparatus in order to do that. Then there's also the scenario of Bell non-locality where we don't like to think of states anymore. We think of black boxes, right? And we call this scenario the device independent one, right? So, I mean, of course, inside the black boxes, you can think that there's a quantum state, but actually what we care as is the inputs. So these are the measurement choices, X and Y, and the outputs of the black boxes. Right, so in the device-independent scenario, we don't think of quantum states. We think of black box behaviors, black box conditional probability distributions, and we say that this behavior is non-local, is Bell non-local, if you cannot write it in this form, which is the local hidden variable models of Bell. Right, so this is just some nomenclature, and then there's also an intermediate, like a hybrid scenario, which is called the EPR steering. So here the property was quantum entanglement, here the property is Bell non-locality, and here the property is EPR steering. So EPR stands for Einstein, Podolsky, Rosen. And we call this the one-sided or semi-device independent scenario. It's a hybrid scenario because we see that somehow we think that Alice still doesn't have a trusted device, and she only has access to her inputs, to her classical bits, to her inputs and outputs. But we assume that Bob has a trusted device with which he can do quantum state tomography and reconstruct the state for each input and output of Alice, for instance, right? So here the objects of the theory are called assemblages. And there's sort of, so again, I insist, this is like a hybrid. You see that, like we say that an assemblage is steerable if you cannot write it in this form, which is some sort of mixture between these two expressions, right? So you see that here we keep the sum over the hidden variables lambda. Alice has this conditional probability distribution, but now we give some hidden states for Bob that depend on each lambda, right? So it's like an intermediate notion of quantum correlations between Bell and quantum entanglement. Okay, and in this talk, I'm gonna try to show you some results in these two settings, in the device in the fully device independent setting and in the one-sided device independent. I hope I can make how much time do I have? Like an hour. Okay, thanks. So okay, so again, so in the so let me start by the fully device independent scenario. So we're talking of bell correlations, and this is the black box behavior that describes our system. Again, these are the local correlations. This is the expression that I already showed. And then let me define what are the quantum correlations, right? As I said, inside the black boxes, we think of quantum states. And then these quantum states give you correlations that you obtain, namely by Born's rule, essentially, right? So we have some quantum state, rho AB, and then we apply measurement operators with outcome A and B and inputs X and Y, choices of measurements X and Y, right? And there is something still more general than quantum correlations, which are the no-signaling correlations. So typically, we think of space-like separated experimentally, Saris and Bob. And if they're space-like separated, we believe in special relativity, and we don't want any communication taking place, any dependence of the outcomes of Alice on the inputs of Bob. That's essentially what the no-signaling principle encodes. It's a linear constraint on the probability distributions that simply tells you that the local statistics of Alice cannot depend on the choice of inputs of the choice of input of Bob and vice versa, right? And it happens that so Bell's theorem essentially tells you that there's something beyond local hidden variable models. So for instance, quantum correlations go beyond. And we know that there are no signaling correlations that may go beyond depending on the scenario, on the number of inputs, users, and outputs. So for instance, when we have two inputs, two outputs, and two users, which is the CHSH scenario, then this is the way it looks like, more or less. So you can represent local correlations by this local polytope. Then the quantum correlations form a convex set that is a supraset of the local correlations. And there are post-quantum no-signaling correlations that are important if there's ever something beyond post-quantum, beyond quantum theory. Okay, so that was more or less the tutorial of non-locality. Now I try to get more specific to the things I want to show today. So let me start by causal inference, right? And so causal inference is the art of observing data and trying to find some causal explanation for this data. And this causal explanation may involve other unobserved things. Right, so here, I don't know, this guy has access to some observations, but there can be some complicated mechanism that explains this observation. He doesn't have access to that complicated mechanism, but he tries to propose different mechanism that explains his observations, and then he tries to check whether it makes sense. Right, that's essentially causal inference. And the connection between Bell non-locality and causal inference is the fact that a Bell experiment is actually a causal inference problem, right? So in a Bell experiment, you have some observable correlations. So here's the conditional probability distributions of outcomes given inputs. That's what you have access to, the observable things. And then you ask yourself whether you can explain these observations with this causal model, for instance. This is the local hidden variable model. So here, here this is in a different color, but you cannot see it. But the round nodes represent observable variables, right? So X, A, Y, and B are classical random variables that you observe, and lambda is the hidden variable to which you don't have access, right? This defines the causal model, and then you try to see whether you can explain your observed correlations with this causal model, right? That's why it's a causal inference problem. The questions that I'd like to touch today is, okay, how much can one strengthen this local hidden variable models while still having a gap with quantum correlations? So as I said, local hidden variables model cannot explain all quantum correlations. That's essentially the essence of Bell non-locality. And we can strengthen those local hidden variable models to try to reproduce all quantum correlations, for instance, right? And then this is associated to the question of what's the simplest causal structure that still admits a gap between classical and quantum predictions, right? And then we will see that this gives rise to new notions of quantum non-locality that are stronger than non-local hidden variable models, right? So more precisely, so I'm going to be, let's see how I go with the time, but essentially I will try to say something in the bipartite device independent scenario and I will consider outcome communication. I will come to this, it will be more precise. I will try to talk of the one-sided device independent case, also with outcome communication. And then I will try to move to the multipartite setting where I will remain in the no signaling scenario without communication. Let's see if I can make it. So as you can see, so these are works in collaboration with Rafael Chavez and also Dani Cavalcanti from Barcelona. There's also Ranieri and Neri that are in Rio. And there's also the experimental group in Rome led by Fabio Ciarrino. So, all right, so let's get started. So device independent bipartite case with outcome communication. So, let me first become a little bit more precise about this causal model. So causal models have a causal structure, and this causal structure has a graphical representation with what is called a DAG. So that stands for directed acyclic graph. So it's a graph, it has nodes and edges, but the edges are directed. And they encode some causal influence from one variable to the other, right? So some dependence, if you want to, some dynamical dependence. They are acyclic because you don't want to have causal loops, right? That's not physical. So for instance, so here, this is the instrumental DAG of which I will talk today. And it has many, many applications. One of them is these randomized clinical trials. So for instance, say that you want to see if, let's say that A is the fact that you, so for instance, you want to see if smoking causes lung cancer or not. So then you can think, so people do these randomized clinical trials where comes the doctor and tells you whether you should stop or not stop smoking, but then the patient may follow his prescription or not, right? And then you will observe a response, whether he gets lung cancer or not. But then the fact that he follows the prescription or not can be perhaps correlated with lung cancer due to some common cause. And this was actually the case that some tobacco companies defended in the 50s. So they thought that there was some genetic predisposition that somehow made people smoke more often when they had a genetic predisposition to develop lung cancer, right? And as we will see with this type of causal structure, you can rule out these type of explanations, right? But this is just to define the language. So a causal model has two ingredients. So this graphical representation, this DAG, and an associated distribution, which is said to be Markov to this with respect to this DAG. And this means that the joint probability distribution of all the variables in the DAG follows this factorization. So look here that I'm not simply using sequentially biased rules, but I'm actually, so there's something stronger here. You see, so A depends only on what it's called its parents, which are X and lambda here. And B depends on what are its parents, which are in this case A and lambda. Okay, so this is a stronger restriction than one gets when one simply does Bayes. So what is the simplest causal structure displaying a gap between quantum and classical correlations? And the thing is that it was actually something simple. It was always in front of our noses. It's the instrumental DAG. So in causal inference, so say that let me come to the simplest causal inference problem. So namely, say that you have two random variables A and B, and you want to know whether they are correlated by some hidden common cause lambda, or if there's actually a direct causation from A to B. That's the causal inference problem that you're given with, right? So you don't have access to lambda. You only observe the statistics of A and B, and you want to know if this is the case or this is the case. And it happens that for this simple case, you can't do it just from passive observations, because both these causal structures are able to reproduce all bipartite probability distributions of A and B. So if I give a bipartite probability distribution, you don't know. You don't have a way to know whether this is the case or this is the case, unless you intervene in the system. So as I said, with passive observations, you cannot distinguish these two cases. But if you actively touch the system and modify its internal dynamics, then you can do it. So then this brings us to the notion of interventions. So interventions, essentially what they do is somehow you assume that you're able to physically modify the system, and then essentially you cut. So for instance, here I do an intervention on A, and this is the notation that people use. It's a do A, so you force that variable A takes a value that I call do A, okay? And what I do is essentially I cut the direct inference from lambda to A, and I simply force it, or if you want to, I throw away the original A and put a new value that I decide, that I control, right? So if this is the underlying causal structure, and I force A to take some value that I control, then nothing will change if I look at the conditional probability distribution of B given A. But if this is the case, then I cut the only means of correlations between A and B, right? So if you do if you make an intervention, and if you observe that this is what they call the Bayesian conditional, and this is what they call the due conditional, if you observe that something changes, then you can actually decide what was the case. Okay, but you have to intervene, and interventions assume that you can actually modify the system a piacere, and this is not device independent. I would like to keep in the device independent setting for the moment. So the instrumental DAG is important because you can actually conclude things about the causal causal inference from A to B without intervention. So you can do it device independently, only from the observations, and even in the presence of some of a hidden common cause, right? So this model started, I mean, it's quite an old model, and it was proposed in the context of linear models for supply and demand. So suppose that I say here's my random variable B, and here's A and lambda, but lambda is unobserved. I don't have access to it. But suppose that this is the underlying causal model. It's a linear model, right? So only from the assumption that, so if it happens that the causal model is instrumental, then it means that the covariance between X and lambda is zero. And simply from this, you can actually show that the strength of the causal influence from A to B, which is quantified by this value of this parameter gamma here, is a function of observable things, right? So this is x, b, and x, y, which are observable things, and this particular expression holds for these linear models. But what people showed in the 90s is that actually there are ways to quantitatively assess the causal inference from A to B. In the general, for a general instrumental causal model. So if the underlying causal structure has this DAG, then there are ways for you to put lower bounds on the causal strength from A to B just from the observations without intervening in the system, even in the presence of these hidden common causes. So that's why it's important for causal inference. So it's like the simplest DAG that displays this property, okay? That you can estimate things in a passive way, only from observations, even in the presence of a hidden lambda, right? So how do you know if a system has an instrumental model as its underlying causal explanation? So people studied this, and they came up with instrumental inequalities which check for compatibility with this DAG. So if you have such a causal model, then you have to satisfy this type of inequalities. So if you violate these inequalities, you know that your underlying causal model is not instrumental. That was the way that's the way it works in the classical regime. So for instance, if you violate it, then you know that the underlying causal explanation must be different, right? Either you have some direct influence from X to B, or you have some correlation from X between X and lambda, right? That's the only way that you can violate an instrumental inequality in the classical regime. And we will see that this is not the case in the quantum regime. So people studied this in the context of quantum causal models. And I will become a bit more specific with this. But they found, so essentially what people study is what happens if we take the instrumental DAG and we think of lambda just not being a classical random variable, but actually being a quantum state and influencing B and A, right? And so people studied that, and they arrived at the conclusion that you could not violate these instrumental inequalities with lambda being quantum, even if you put it, even if you give it even if you put entanglement into lambda. So somehow, after this result, so people, I don't know, they didn't pay attention to the instrumental scenario in the quantum case for some time, but then. But then we will see that there is still something interesting in the quantum case for the instrumental lag. So the first thing that I want to do is like say, okay, even if there are even in the situations where there's no violations, can we find some observable discrepancy between the classical and the quantum instrumental causal structures? And the way we do that, so first let me define what I mean by a quantum instrumental causal model. So as I said, so what I'm gonna do now is simply to quantize lambda. Essentially, I'm gonna take like the most basic ingredient, which is to promote lambda, the common cause, from being a classical random variable to being a quantum state. So here, I think of it as being a bipartite quantum state. This is not the only way you can do it, and there's people in the audience that have written. Many papers on the full quantization of causal models, but here it suffices to take. So I'm going to take the simplest case where we have a bipartite quantum state lambda, and now so I mean the so we take again the probability the rule of given by the measurements on rho lambda, right, where this rho lambda is a quantum common cause. So if you do that, you can I'm gonna look at this average causal effect, which is a quantifier of the causal strength between A and B. So Let me define this quantifier, and I will tell you what we see with this. So so this classical average causal effect is defined in the following way. So what you do is to define. So this is the maximum observable change on the statistics of B caused by interventions on A on average. So it's on average because so this guy here do not depend on lambda, right? So lambda is already implicitly summed inside of there. So so essentially what you do is you do an A and you do A prime for two different values and you look at them at the supremum. So essentially I unplug, as I said, I do an intervention, I unplug A from its parents, X and lambda, and I put an intervention here that forces a value do A here. And I'd look at this at the supremum of this difference. And by that I see like what's the average, the maximum average change in the statistics of B. With respect to an intervention on A, right? And this is a quantifier. This is one measure of causal strength between A and B. And I mean, it's defined in terms of interventions, but there's a very convenient lower bound to this quantity, which is given in terms of only observable Bayesian conditionals. So to have access to this, I need to intervene in the system, but there's a lower bound to this. That is expressed only in terms of the Bayesian conditionals that you observe, and then I can take my quantum causal model that I defined up there. So I can take a particular quantum state. So say that I take now rho lambda, given as a convex combination of a maximally entangled two-qubit state with a maximally mixed state for some parameter ni between 0 and 1. And then I apply certain measurements. So I have two choices of Pauli measurements for Alice and two choices of Pauli measurement for Bob. So notice that, so this is the input of Alice, X, and this is the output A. And the input of Bob is given by the output of Alice, right? So I still have this classical communication here that sends her output to him, right? So he decides which Pauli measurement he will do depending on which value she sends him, right? So A is sent just by classical communication. And then it happens that for this particular state under these specific measurements, the resulting correlations are compatible with a classical instrumental model for all nu, right? It just happens, you can check it. So then I can apply these bounds, and these bounds give me this value here, and you see that when nu is sufficiently close to one, then this this average causal effect is positive, right? And then what I will show you is that you can, you see, like this is, so there is, we can define the quantum average causal effect, and it happens that the quantum average causal effect is zero, right? So you do a calculation for the classical case, and it gives you something positive. And then you define it in the proper way, taking into account that the system is quantum, and this gives you zero, which means that, let's say, the causal strength is overestimated when you're restricted to classical models and you're actually looking at a quantum one. So so how do you do that? Well, so we define the quantum ACE in the same way. It's just that we put a Q here, and then we have to see who was Q. So again, this is the expression that I was already showing. And if this is the expression for the joint probability distribution of A and B, then the reduced, so sorry, the conditional of B looks like this. So remember that, again, we think of interventions as, okay, I kill the influence from the parents, I'm gonna make an intervention on A, so I kill the influence of lambda and X on A, and I force it to take a given value, which is 2A, okay? So if that happens, then when I look at the conditional probability distribution, the due conditional probability distribution of getting B given due A, all I have to do in this expression is to simply force this this value to be due A, right? I mean, see that, like, this part here enters when you're looking at A, but here we're only conditioning on B, okay? So this is kind of a extremely simple observation, but you see that in the end, what you get something, in the end, what you get is something that depends only on the reduced state of B, right? So this rho lambda B is simply the reduced state of your bipartite state here. But for the, and then you plug this into here and you get this expression, okay? But then when you take a state as the one I took, you see that, again, so this is a convex combination of a maximally entangled state with a maximally mixed one. So this means that the reduced state for Bob is the maximally mixed for all nu's, right? So if you plug this into here, then you get that this is proportional to the identity. And then in the end, what you get is essentially the trace of this. This is a von Neumann projector onto the output B and for the measurement choice A. And this is a von Neumann projector onto the output B for the measurement choice due A prime. Both of them are trace one. So you get one minus one, and this gives you zero. This is always traceless, okay? So it's an extremely simple observation, but it tells you that the average statistics observable at B must be more sensitive to interventions on A if the causal model is classical, right? That's essentially the way you interpret this. And this can be seen as sort of quantum enhancements in terms of the causal strength, of the descriptive power of quantum causal models with respect to classical ones. Of course, yeah.
Although the reduced density operator B is the complete mixed state, what if I just consider POVM measurements?
True.
POVM elements.
It doesn't hold. That's true. It doesn't hold. So if you consider some generic POVM or some state such that it's reduced, it's not the maximally mixed state, then this doesn't hold. I'm not saying that this is fully general. I'm just showing an example where, if you look at all classical causal models, then you need a positive ACE, but you can see that here you need but the actual quantum ACE is zero, right? Okay,
but shouldn't we call this the quantum projective measurements ACE? Because you're particularizing, or maybe it's a more general class than just projective measurements, but it's not general. So it's conceivable that in the classical case, I could also find a subset of all measurements such that the average.
Yeah, you're right. If you look at all
positives. One classical difference per se, because it could be an artifact of your restriction on the measurements.
Well, I mean, I'm saying this is specific to the choice of measurements, but the choice of measurements is what makes the causal model, right? So the causal model is given by the state and the measurements that I take on the state to produce these values A and B, right? So my definition of causal model is the causal structure and the specific conditional probabilities connecting each parent with its child, with the children, right? So the way in this specific causal model, I have a given state and a given set of measurements. right? But yeah, I mean, one can argue of the nomenclature if you want to, perhaps one can say projective A, quantum A's, but the way I think of quantum causal models is the prescription of how to get the statistics of A and B with respect to its parents. And this prescription involves already a specific choice of measurements, right? But you are right. If this is only true because these are von Neumann projective measurements, right?
Let me just ask a follow-up question. So if you do restrict your measurements in your state, which I understand why you're doing that, is there a sense in which you can say, here's what the classical average causal effect would be for that particular choice of state and measurements?
Yes.
Can you take me through that again? Because maybe I missed.
Sorry, what's the question again?
The question is there for a particular choice of the quantum state and the quantum measurements, can I make sense of the notion of what would the classical average causal effect be for those choices?
Yeah, because so the way we do it is we use a bound. So I mean, for this specific state and these specific measurements, I get correlations that are compatible with classical instrumental causal models, right? They do not. So with this specific choice of state and measurements, you don't violate a classical instrumental inequality, right? And you have this bound for all classical instrumental causal models. You know that they must satisfy this bound. So you have a lower bound to the actual ACE in terms of observable things, right? So all we do is simply we apply this bound because these correlations produced by these quantum states and these quantum measurements are compatible with classical instrumental causal models, right? So we know that the classical ACE must be positive if you choose nu close enough to one, right? Because this bound has to hold. And then we go to the quantum case, we look at the quantum ACE, and we find that it's zero.
Is the derivation of the bound presuming the existence of the hidden variables that?
Indeed, yeah. So exactly. So this bound holds whenever you have this classical structure, right? So these are all classical random variables, right? Yeah, thanks. Yeah. So as I was saying, this game here requires that I do these interventions, right? So here, to define this quantum ACE, I need to intervene on the system. And the question is whether I can observe some discrepancy between this quantum and classical instrumental models in the device-independent way, right? And the way one does that is to look at instrumental inequalities and to find the quantum violations for those instrumental inequalities. Okay, so what I was showing in the previous model, so both Alice and Bob, they had two choices of measurements. In the specific model that I was showing, you had two choices of Pauli observables to measure. But if you go to the trichotomic case, so namely now I have three choices of measurement, then a new inequality appears. So this is also an instrumental inequality. And it happened, so first we solved what is called the causal polytope, right? It's just a linear program, but then we found out that this inequality was already derived long ago. And so when you have only dichotomic instruments, dichotomic variables X, the causal model satisfied the previous instrumental inequalities that I had shown that had no quantum violation. But when you move to the case where X has three possibilities, that Alice chooses between three different measurements, then a new non-trivial inequality appears, that is this one. And now it's very, it's a trivial observation to see that if you take the quantum common cause as being a maximally entangled qubit state, then you get a violation of this inequality, right? So this is something interesting because, so again, it's a simple observation, but I think it's interesting because of at least, or I like to think of it as two, at least from two different viewpoints. So first, from the causal inference viewpoint. So in the classical regime, if you had some observable correlations that violate an instrumental inequality, it can only happen because the underlying causal model is not instrumental. So for instance, you can have, if you can have, for instance, an arrow going straight from X to B, right? But what we're showing here is an experiment where the underlying causal structure is certainly the instrumental one. There's no extra arrow anywhere, right? But you get a violation, right? So in fact, so you're able to connect. So there's this other measure of causality between A and B. Sorry. So for instance, here you're able to connect the violation of this of the instrumental inequality with the strength of the causal arrow that you would need for a classical model like this to reproduce the violation, right? So all I'm saying is that, like, if your statistics come from a quantum experiment, then now you can violate an instrumental inequality, not necessarily because you have an extra arrow. It's just because your nodes have quantum properties, right? So that's why this is somehow connected to causal inference or quantum causal inference. But then, of course, there is a connection with Bell non-locality, right? Because you can look you can look at the classical instrumental network as if you had, like, if you want to come closer to what is local hidden variable models. So in local hidden variable models, again, you have X and B, X and A, Y and B, and then there's the hidden variable, the classical hidden variable lambda. So you see that I can think of this as having somehow, as having an influence from A to Y and then an influence to B, right? So these two things are essentially the same thing if I forget about Y, right? So all I want to say is that a violation of an instrument, a quantum violation of an instrumental inequality can be thought of as a quantum violation of this non-local hidden variable model, where you have an influence from A to Y, right? So in that sense, we're talking of a stronger form of non-locality, in the sense that it's non the hidden variable is non-local now. Okay, so these are two things that to me are relevant, we're theoretical physicists, but I should devote at least one slide to the experiment. So the experiment was done in Rome by the group of Fabio Chiarino, and it's actually a very simple experiment. So you produce, you have a source of entangled photon states where we prepare something that looks approximately as a pure maximally entangled state. And then one photon goes to Alice's lab, the other one goes to Bob, and Alice has a choice of three different measurement settings, right? So one of them, all of them are Pauli measurements. And for each choice of measurement, he gets two outcomes, right? It's a Pauli measurement, so you get up or down in the given basis, right? And then she sends these outcomes to Bob, who has two choices of measurements and two outcomes per measurement, right? So the way you do, and these are again Pauli measurements, and this the way they do that is actually, so here's the photon source, and they send one photon to Bob, the other photon to Alice. And here is where the feed-forward mechanism takes place. So as I say, Alice has to send the outcomes of her measurement to Bob, right? So this is done by, so here are the detectors. So if this one click, you send a signal. If this one click, you send another signal. And here there's this things called a Pockels cell, which essentially are like wave plates that depend on the voltage that you apply. So essentially they apply a rotation in polarization depending on the voltage that they receive. And with this, you can make the measurement basis, the measurement choice of Bob, depend on the outcome of Alice, right? So there's a feed-forward mechanism. And they get a clear violation of the inequality, right? So I guess that's pretty much it for this part. The instrumental causal structure is important for causal inference, and we looked at discrepancies in this scenario between the quantum and the classical predictions in two senses. One of them is in this average causal effect, and the other one is in terms of an actual violation of instrumental inequalities, right? So the violation changes a little bit the interpretation of an instrumental inequality violation. The quantum violation, And the experiment is a simple experiment using active feedforward, and it's in a sense a demonstration of a form of non-locality stronger than non-local hidden variable models. There are some questions that one can think of. So I don't know, perhaps whether there's something interesting in the multipartite case, whether one can look at multipartite extensions of these instrumental networks. More connected to causal inference, it would be nice to have like a device independent lower bound of this quantum maze. So for the classical ACE, we use this device independent lower bound that you put in terms only of observable distributions. It would be nice to have something like that for the quantum maze. Also it would be nice to look at possible definitions of quantum direct causal influence. It's not clear to me how to do that. And then of course one can start playing with post-quantum things, and then it would be nice to actually see if this is a useful resource for something, right? So, I mean, we have this structure here and there's communication. So already in the classical network, there's communication from Alice to Bob. So I don't know, doesn't look too natural for me to propose this as a candidate for some QKD thing, but perhaps it's worth taking a look at randomness generation. I'm not sure if there's an obvious way to see if this is useless or not. So how am I doing with the time? I guess this extent 20 minutes. All right, so then perhaps I move. Okay, let me go. Let me move then to the the next thing is this one-sided device independent bipartite case. So instead of going through the details of it, I'm gonna skip it and I'm gonna move to the third topic of the talk. It's just that I have a few slides. So essentially here what we do is a study of incompatibility also in the instrumental scenario between quantum and classical models, but for the one-sided device independent regime, where not only can you quantize the common cause, but also the node of Bob B is also quantum, right? And there are some interesting observations there that appear, but I don't have time for that. I would like to show you something in the multipartite regime. Okay, okay. So this is gonna be short. I just have five more slides essentially, and I would like to quickly go through them. Now I'm gonna, right, so I'm gonna go to the other extreme, right? So in the previous part, I was talking of simple causal structures. Essentially, we had three observable nodes and a hidden common cause, and I was allowing for communication between Alice and Bob. So now I'm not gonna allow for communication. I'm gonna stay throughout in the no signaling regime, but I'm gonna increase the number of users now. There's no more Alice and Bob. There will be many, many users now, okay? So again, I will start from the bipartite local hidden variable causal structure. And I'm gonna look at, so for instance, in the bipartite case, there's two types of relaxations of causal assumptions that you can do. So here the causal assumptions are, for instance, that there's no direct influence from X to B or from X to Y, and that lambda is independent and then independent of X and Y, right? So I can relax that, and I can, for instance, add an extra arrow from X to B, and this is a relaxation of locality. And I can also relax the freedom of choice of measurement bases by putting an arrow from lambda to X, for instance, right? It's as if the dice that Bob has to decide which measurement bases he uses is somehow controlled by the hidden variable lambda, okay? And you see that the only change here is that now B start depending on X, whereas this was not the case here. And here you have some correlation between lambda and X that appears in this term here that was not present there, okay? So it is known that if you do any of these two, so if you look at at these more powerful, these stronger causal models, then you can actually reproduce all bipartite correlations, all bipartite observable correlations. We have strengthened the underlying causal model, and therefore I can produce now more things, right? And this happens for the bipartite case. So in the multipartite case, this is no longer true. So it is known, for instance, and people studied this many years ago. So here you can have causal models where you relax locality, where you allow, for instance, B to depend on X and A to depend on Y. This is called, these are Shvedlichny models, and this is called input broadcasting. For instance, you send one input, so you have now B and C depend on X, right? But I always, I am allowing B and C to depend on X, but this does not mean that the observable statistics will display signaling, right? So it may happen that, so people here know this very well, it's called fine tuning. So you may have causal models such that B and C depend on X for each lambda, but such that when you sum over lambda, the resulting observable statistics is still no signaling. It's as if at the level of the hidden variable, you allow for this dependence, but somehow you hide it away after summing out lambda, okay? So that's more or less the flavor. And all I wanna say about this is that these causal structures give rise to what is known as generally multipartite Bell non-locality. So it is known that these models satisfy an inequality that is called the Shvedlichny inequality.
Both or just the one?
Sorry?
Both,
yeah. So it is known that actually there's even more general models that satisfy this Shvedlichny inequality. But let's keep with these two. So it happens that these models satisfy an inequality that is violated by quantum correlation. So now I take a tripartite quantum state, I make local measurements on it, I obtain correlations that violate this inequality. So that's why people define the notion of genuinely multipartite Bell non-locality. It's generally multipartite because you're not only non-local, you're generally multipartite non-local, right? There, you cannot even find a bipartite split with which to split your system such that the correlations are local with respect to that bipartition, okay? So the way you define it is, so here I'm looking at a particular bipartition, but the way you do it is actually you take convex combinations of permutations of this. Right, you look at the convex hull. But I don't want to become too technical with that for the moment. Anyway, so this is an old story. This is something that people knew. And the thing is that we would like to have, I mean, our motivation here was, okay, what happens when you start increasing the number of users, right? So it happens that if you start looking at this Bell ducts, right, they are exponentially complex objects. I mean, the number of combinations of arrows that you can have between inputs and outputs and lambda grows exponentially with the number of users. So it was like having like a unified classification, like an elegant way to classify them was kind of an unrealistic goal. Because, I mean, I don't know, as far as I know, nobody had like an organized way to classify these things. So what we came out in this paper was simply to exploit the no signaling constraint. Okay, so as I said, the no signaling principle imposes linear constraints on the correlations. And here we exploit these linear constraints to show equivalences between different Bell ducts. So there are many different Bell ducts that you look at them and they look different, but you can show that the subset of correlations that they produce compatible with the no signaling principle are equivalent. That's what we call no signaling equivalence. And it's a little technical. I'm not going to derive it here. We can talk about that later. But the thing is that this allowed us to come up with something that we call the causal hierarchy, right, of multipartite Bell non-locality. So the main theorem of the paper is, so here, for instance, We do it for the tripartite case. Actually, in the supplementary material, we also have it for the four-partite case. You can actually formulate it for an arbitrary multipartite case, but the complexity is still fearsome, right? But we do it explicitly here for the tripartite case, and we get some non-trivial results. So essentially, there's three statements. So you see that the hierarchy is like this. So at the lowest at the lowest level of the hierarchy, you have the usual local hidden variable models. So again, now we have three users, but we have one lambda, and each outcome depends on its input and on lambda. That's like the starting point of the hierarchy. And then you start adding causal relaxations, and you can and this defines like a larger class of correlations. But this larger class of correlations can always be represented by an input to output relaxation in terms of causal, in terms of the causal structure. So this is like the first level of the hierarchy. And as I said, this involves only one relaxation, one input to output relaxation. Here's the second level of the hierarchy, which involves two relaxations, and there are different classes. This is the third layer, and this is the fourth layer. And there are more layers that I'm not showing here because they are what some people call no signaling boring, because they already reproduce all no signaling correlations. So all I'm showing here are the relevant classes that still have a gap with respect to no signaling correlation. So there's something else beyond. So it can, so these classes can still be violated, so to say. That's all the part of the hierarchy that I'm showing here. And so in this paper, oh, you cannot see, actually it's too light. So there's a light blue going here. I don't know if you can see it. No, okay, so these six classes, so people had studied this actually in this paper in 2005, and they had already realized that these six classes here, this one, these three, and this one, they satisfy Shvedlin inequality, right? So all of them are violated by quantum correlations. This was known, okay? And what was not known, it was known that these three violate Shvedlin inequality, but it was not known whether there would be a quantum quantum correlations that violate these ones, right? So this is what we got now. So essentially, like we found quantum correlations that are even stronger than these classes, and it's an open question whether there are quantum correlations beyond this one, right? So you can have collapse. Many interesting things happen. So you can have what we call collapses. So this is like some sort of we inherit some terminology of the polynomial hierarchy of in computational complexity, right? But here's a causal hierarchy. But you can have collapses. So this means actually that these three things, it may happen that they produce the same set of no signaling correlations. And this is the case here. But this you have to show explicitly. This is not immediate, but actually it's not so complicated, but you can see it. So these three classes are actually a single same class of no signaling correlations, and we find a quantum violation of an inequality satisfied by these three classes here, right? So this shows like a novel form of multipartite correlations that is stronger than the usual notion of generally multipartite non-locality, right? So the way you do it, okay, so this is my last slide before the conclusions. So the way you do it is the following one. So I'm taking here, so we call this the star class because there is a node that gets the inputs from all other users. And we call this one the circle, because like this sends the input here, this sends the input here, and this sends the input here. So you have like a circle. And I'm gonna look now at violations of this one, how we found the violations of this one. So it's actually, so you can actually show that there are situations, so for instance, when you have two inputs and four outputs, and you can think, you can show that this family satisfies inequalities of the following form. So here I'm considering some sort of experiment where I have one user here, another user here, and I have two outputs here. two outputs here and two outputs here, right? And so this is like a sum of bipartite inequalities between A and B, and between A prime and C, and between B prime and C, right? So you can actually, and this thing here is the local bound, and this is the no signaling bound. Okay, I don't want to become too technical, but I mean, you can show that these inequalities can be violated by quantum correlations, and if you increase the number of outputs, you can even attain maximal algebraic violations. And the way you do it is with this type of states, essentially, right? So this is something a bit curious, because actually you only need bipartite states, bipartite quantum states, but this is the way we found. I mean, somehow you have bipartite quantum states and you distribute it in this way, and you can come up with violations of this inequality, where the inequality is satisfied by all models of this type, right? So this is the claim that this multipartite quantum non-locality is stronger than the conventional notion of generally multipartite non-locality. So the conclusions are that so we studied multipartite no signaling correlations with respect to generic causal relaxations, and we exploit the no signaling principle to draw equivalences between different Bell ducts. And this leads us to a practical classification of classes of multipartite non-locality. So actually, this paper was published in this journal, and there was like a News and Views by Paul Skripczyk. And I like the way he put it, like what was previously a vast forest is now a well-organized playground ready to be explored and played in. That's kind of a nice summary. So we have this quantum correlations that are even stronger than generally multipartite non-locality. And then there's this open question to what happens with the other class, right? And of course, here it would be nice to see whether, again, coming to the point of view of resource, where one can do something stronger. So I mean, like something that I'd like to see is to understand if one can, what stronger notion of multipartite security are these correlations useful for? We know that they have to be stronger than device independent secret sharing. So, but that's kind of a technical thing also. We can talk about that. And also this curious fact that like whether you can have some more concise quantum state that displays this type of non-locality, not like this distribution of bipartite quantum states. So I close with this. So I talked about the quantization of classical notion of causality non-trivial, stronger forms of quantum correlations, multipartite super non-locality, this abuse of language a little bit, and these super instrumental correlations. So these are just born babies, and we would like to understand them better, and in particular, in the point of view of resource. So I should say something about my collaborators in Rio. So the group in Rio is actually very large. There are people working on quantum metrology and theory of quantum optics, experiments also. But this is the subgroup with whom I collaborate. So this is Carolina. She's in her master. This is Renato, Eric, and Ranieri. They're PhD students. Here's Marcio, who's a postdoc. And this is Steve, who's the head of the experimental part of our group, right? So we also collaborate a lot with him. He's one of those experimentalists that also understands theory. And then, of course, I have many close collaborators. So, of course, here's Rafael, who was involved in these works, Dani, Tony, Fabio, Rodrigo in Berlin, Adan in Sevilla, Belen, who's here, Paul, Marco, Nicolas, Barbara, and Marcelo. Okay, so thank you very much. Thank you. Yes, please.
At the very end of the talk, I just didn't understand in what sense violations of the new inequalities they have for the ones on the right-hand side are a stronger form of multipartite non-locality than violations of Svedlicny.
Of the Svedlicny, yeah. Yeah. Hold on. So that's a good question. Thanks for that. So there's this nice paper of Jones, Linden, and Massar of 2005, where they had already studied. So they didn't have this no signal in equivalence, but based on intuition, they had already looked at input to output Bell DAC. Not with the language of Bayesian networks, but it's there. They had already studied that, and they show that these three classes. Okay, so this six here, they satisfy the Shvedlikhny inequality. This one, these three, and this one. Okay, and they knew already there that they had a quantum violation because you have a quantum violation of the Shvedlikhny inequality, and they had already they knew that these three classes give rise to correlations that violate the Shvedlikhny inequality. Okay, but they didn't have an inequality that is satisfied by these three, and that is violated by quantum correlations. So this is what we found here. So it's actually something very simple. You simply solve so what we did is to solve the correlation polytope of this class, and then this led us to this inequality here, and then you find quantum violations of this inequality, right? So the claim is that these three classes were already known to violate Shvedlikhny, but it was not known whether there were quantum correlations beyond these three classes, right? So now we have an inequality satisfied by these three classes with the quantum violation.
Is the left-hand side of that inequality exactly the same form as in the Shvedlikhny inequality?
No.
Okay.
No.
So then my question is just, why not just say that, you know, this is a different kind of multipart Dyton locality? I guess I'm wondering, why is it stronger than a violation?
Okay, you're right. Yeah, it's not necessarily...
It's like a complementary form of multipart Dyton.
Yeah. So, okay, so perhaps that's the most precise way to state it. Yeah, because, okay, so I don't remember exactly the details now, but, like, it's not that the inequality that this satisfies kind of contains all of the correlations that I mean, it's like the Shvedlikhny inequality perhaps is at some different corner of the polytope than this one. Yeah, so that's what your observation. Well, yeah, that's true.
If this is a hierarchy and those red arrows indicate equivalence of correlations.
Sorry?
If the red arrows indicate equivalent correlations.
Yeah, this three produce the same set of no signaling correlations.
So then the fact that you can go from those which satisfy Shvedlikhny to the one at the bottom tells us that everything that satisfies Shvedlikhny is included in these models.
That's true.
So if you are outside of these models, you are also outside of any model.
That's true. I mean, so the thing is that, like, all the correlations produced by this class are necessarily also produced by this class, because this class, like you say, is the same as this but more powerful because it has an extra arrow, right? However, that does not necessarily contradict what he said.
No, but it suggests a flavor of what it means to be stronger. If Shvedlikhny's inequality rejects you from being in those classes, mm-hmm. and this inequality rejects you from being in these classes, mm-hmm. they're not inequivalent because violating this inequality rejects you from all these classes as well as the Shvedlikhny inequality.
True. That's right. That's true. You're right. Yeah. So if you violate... That's perhaps the best way to state it, right? These classes satisfy an inequality such that if you violate it, you know that you're not here, and therefore not here, not here, not here, right? So I think that's perhaps the best way to state it. Yeah, thanks. Yeah, Dennis.
A small question. Like here you talk about this graph in full generality, like the number of inputs and outputs as long as it's more than binary, like, I mean, as long as it's not trivial, then the result would apply, right? You did not restrict the dimensionality of anything.
So this is general. Mm-hmm. What happens is that, so for instance, if you consider in this particular case of three users, mm-hmm. what happens is that, for instance, for the case of boundary inputs and outputs, this already becomes no signaling boring.
Okay.
So I mean, it's even simpler, the hierarchy for that case. This is the hierarchy in general for any number of inputs and outputs.
Okay.
But when you look at specific particular cases, the hierarchy simplifies even more, right?
Ah, that's interesting.
I mean, this. So, for instance, these three, if I remember correctly, these three become no signaling boring in the case of two inputs and two outputs. Yeah. But here, I'm not assuming anything of the cardinality of inputs and outputs. Yeah. Yes.
There was a point at which you posed the question of what it would mean to define a direct causal influence in a causal model. Are you aware of the definition in Costa and Shrapnel's paper?
In?
Costa and Shrapnel have a paper.
No, I'm not aware.
So it's pretty simple. It's just if you want to know if A causes B in a quantum causal model, then you have to range over all interventions at B and all interventions at A.
Mm-hmm.
And see if you can find a difference in statistics of B for some intervention.
But so, okay, I should see that. I'm not aware of that. What troubles me is a little bit that in the definition of the direct causal influence, so you sum over lambda, and you sort of, so in the classical case, so you sum of the difference of effects for B given do A and do prime and lambda, and you average over lambda outside of an absolute value. I mean, it's a bit technical discussion, but I don't have it. Perhaps it's just my lack of imagination of how to deal with that when lambda is a quantum state. But perhaps I'm interested in that, and you should show it to me more in the discussion. Yeah. Thanks. Yeah. Thanks. Yeah.
Do you know that it's not possible to turn your example where you look at the average causal effect?
Yeah.
You say, well, that's not device dependent because generally you require interventions. In the classical case, you get this lower bound, which is device independent. But is there any prospect for showing that the quantum average causal effect could be re-expressed in terms of correlations and therefore have a device-independent violation of the classical bound, or is that known to be impossible?
I don't think it's known to be impossible, but that's my knowledge, right? One should think about that. There's this recent paper by the Barcelona group where they show device-independent certification of entanglement for all entangled states, and but they put that in, so they have some correlations and they put them in a network, and then essentially they put it in terms of self-testing. I don't know if I saw it and I had the feeling that perhaps one should look at that and see that, but I don't know. To be honest, we haven't looked at that at all. It's just something that would, I don't know the answer. It's just something that we don't have here, right? So the line of reasoning for us was like, okay, first you have a quantum model, but you put noise on it, on the quantum state in the common cause, so that it's still compatible with classical instrumental causal networks. And then we tried to find some discrepancy there that did not require a violation of instrumental inequality, right? And then we came up with this quantum average causal effect. And then when we wanted to see device independently, well, we looked at the violation of the inequality, right? But if one had a lower bound in terms of black box correlations of the quantum A's, then it would also be nice. But I don't know if it's known not to be possible. No, I don't know.
In this relaxation hierarchy, you're considering allowing signaling from the choice of input to one of the other party's outputs.
Yeah.
But there's no relaxation from inputs to input. From output to output.
That's a very good question. So I didn't have time to show that in detail. But so this is like that's connected to what you were saying to me yesterday, right, at dinner. So it is included. So, I mean, like, relaxing, it's like, it, so this classification, it's simple because it kind of, it's like a coarse-grained vision, so to say. So, I mean, we could have a more a detailed classification where I look at all the possible ways of connecting not only input to outputs, but also outputs to inputs, for instance, right? But like this model is able to reproduce, I mean, sending the input here is, I mean, like, let's say the correlations that you reproduce with the models that don't have this arrow, but have an arrow that go from A1 to A2 are contained in the set of correlations that you produce with this relaxation, right? Because if A2 receives lambda and X1, then this is already enough. Like, you don't need A1, right? So somehow you can think of A1 as a deterministic function of X1 and lambda, right? So somehow, like, within this class, the subclass of correlations that you obtain by sending an arrow from A1 to A2 is contained, right? So it's kind of like we don't zoom in with so much detail, right? We want something simple, and therefore, like, we're happy with this. That's like sort of a supraset, if you want to, right? But it's true. I mean, so actually, we have lemmas. I mean, if you look at the paper, so the technical results that we have are two lemmas. Let me see. Hold on. Okay. So here's the no signaling equivalence, and essentially what we have is the two technical components are these two lemmas that essentially say, like, if you're restricted to the no signaling scenario, the most general or the strongest relaxation of non-locality that you can have, which is essentially sending everything from Alice to everything to Bob, is equivalent to just sending this. And then what you're saying is just a subset where you simply send one arrow, right? But in the no signaling case, so this is equivalent to this strongest notion of causal or non-locality relaxation. And then we have something similar for the case of measurement independence, right? But it's a very good question, yeah.
Just to add to that, when you consider possibility of quantum violations, things that would be equivalent in these classical frameworks but might become inequivalent.
Sorry?
When you consider replacing your classical source with the quantum correlations, lambda with quantum correlations, then it's not the case that A1 would be a deterministic function.
That's true.
And lambda anymore. And so you could get differences at the quantum level between DAGs that look equivalent to the classical level.
That's true. That's true. Yeah.
But that's not
the claim here, right?
No, I understand. I'm just saying that those things which look equivalent in the classical case, it might still be useful to make those distinctions so that when you talk about the possibility of quantum correlations that don't respect that causal structure, you know, you're not just talking about one representative of an equivalence class that's only equivalence with respect to a different sort of model. So
what
I'm saying is you have to be careful to make sure that those equivalences don't get ported over to the quantum discussion.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Well, that's true. Yeah. Mm-hmm.